I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, policy shift. President Joe Biden makes a major announcement about the use of U.S. missiles in Russia. We have analysis. X marks the spot. Anustani examines the number of Americans who receive their news from social media. A new chapter. A soon-to-be-released book by Pope Francis includes his views on the Israeli attacks in Gaza. Plus, a lot on his plate. The Holy Father also hosts a lunch for 1,300 people at the Vatican. We'll explain. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Rose, Philippine Duchesne. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden made a decision to allow Ukraine to deliver a deeper punch against Russia. For months, such a move was ruled out over fears of escalating the conflict. A Kremlin spokesman says Washington's decision is adding fuel to the fire, and this is all happening as the Trump administration prepares to take over. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, the U.S. is easing on what Ukraine can strike with its ATACMS, which stands for American-Made Army Tactical Missile System. They have a range of about 190 miles.
At the G20 summit in Brazil, President Joe Biden, speaking at his last G20 summit, tells other world leaders,
"The United States strongly supports Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Everyone around this table, in my view, should as well."
Biden's comments coming the day after reports that he had quietly eased restrictions on ATACMS. The decision authorizing Ukraine to use U.S.-supplied missiles to strike deeper inside Russia by easing limitations on longer-range weapons comes as Russia deploys thousands of North Korean troops to reinforce its war. The U.S. State Department spokesperson today addressed the new policy shift.
I'm not going to speak to or confirm any policy changes. But when you look at escalation of this conflict, it has been Russia that has escalated the conflict time and time again.
This comes as Russia launches more deadly missile attacks, conducting a devastating aerial campaign against Ukrainian civilians, killing and injuring scores of people. And tomorrow, marking 1,000 days since Russia invaded back in early 2022, the war shows no signs of ending.
Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin said, quote, on discussing the Ukraine war, quote, "This war risks dragging us into a nuclear confrontation, a descent into the abyss." He just said that. What's the State Department's reaction to that statement by the Cardinal?
That we want to see the war end in a way that provides a just and lasting peace for Ukraine.
Russian President Vladimir Putin warned in June that Moscow could provide longer-range weapons to others to strike Western targets if NATO allowed Ukraine to use its weapons to attack Russian territory. Putin also reaffirmed Russia's readiness to use nuclear weapons if it sees a threat to its sovereignty.
By the way, Putin is the G20 summit's most notable absentee. That's because there's an arrest warrant out for him. Meanwhile, President Biden will attend the summit again tomorrow, and then he returns back home here to the U.S. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right. Thank you so much, Owen. And for analysis, let's bring in Richard Weitz, Senior Fellow and Director of the Center for Political Military Analysis at the Hudson Institute. Richard, good to be with you today. For months, the White House refused to grant a weapons request from Ukraine, and now President Biden has shifted his position. Do you think this is just a response to North Korean soldiers entering the war?
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. So I think there are probably three factors at work in the President Biden's decision. So first, we've seen a very devastating attack over the weekend, as noted in your package, in which the Russian missiles and drones destroyed substantial civilian energy infrastructure in Ukraine. And that we want to prevent that, to avoid the humanitarian suffering that would occur if in the winter, if these kind of attacks continue. Second, as you noted, there's been a major change in the battlefield scenario with the introduction of perhaps 10,000 North Korean troops into the war. We certainly want them to go back to North Korea. We don't want any other foreign troops to appear on the battlefield. And so The president's decision will discourage these kinds of adventures in the future. And then finally, President Biden is taking advantage of the opportunity presented by his transition status to await President Trump's return. President Biden has some leeway to take steps that would have been seen as escalatory in the past, but would be unlikely to provoke a response by President Putin at this time, given his probably the Russian desire to see what President Trump's policies will be.
Richard, can you quickly tell us about these missiles, specifically, you know, how it will impact this their military strategy in Ukraine?
Sure. So Ukraine has had these missiles for a while. It's been using them against targets inside Ukraine, including occupied Crimea, with some impact. They have almost a 200-mile, 300-kilometer range. They can carry a single warhead or multiple smaller warheads. Their main purpose is to force the Russians to move valuable targets that might be attacked away. So you want to get the Russians to take their own missiles, artillery, warplanes, and so on, and move them beyond the range of these missiles, which reduces their ability to attack Ukraine.
We have about 30 seconds left or so, but do you think other countries such as the UK will follow suit, allowing the use of long-range missiles?
Yes, I think the UK and France will, but the Germans look like they will not.
All right, Richard, thank you so much for weighing in. We really appreciate your expertise today.
Thank you.
All right, now to the war in the Middle East. The chief spokesman for the militant group Hezbollah is dead after a rare Israeli airstrike in Beirut, Lebanon. Israel says Mohammed Afif al-Nabulsi, shown right here during a news conference last week, had significant influence over Hezbollah's military strategy. The strike in central Beirut came as officials in Lebanon were considering a ceasefire deal brought forward by U.S. officials. The funeral was held today, one day after the latest bombing to target a senior Hezbollah official. Meantime, in Gaza, a report says at least 30 people are dead following another Israeli airstrike. And two other attacks killed around a half a dozen people at a refugee camp in central Gaza. Pope Francis is calling for an investigation to determine if Israeli airstrikes in Gaza are a war crime in a new book set to be released as part of the 2025 Jubilee year. The Holy Father says, quote, according to some experts, what is happening in Gaza has the characteristics of a genocide. It should be carefully investigated to determine whether it fits into the technical definition formulated by jurists and international bodies. Since the fighting began more than a year ago, the Holy Father has repeatedly met with hostages and their relatives, as well as Palestinians living through the war. Our president-elect Trump unveils another pick to help fill out his cabinet. He is tapping Brendan Carr to lead the Federal Communications Commission. Carr currently serves as a commissioner on the board. Before that, he was general counsel for the agency. Trump first nominated Carr to the FCC back in 2000. With Republicans taking control of the White House and both chambers of Congress, GOP leaders are making big plans for January. Everything from securing the border to controlling inflation. But first, they will have to deal with a looming government shutdown before December 20th. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with that story. Eric.
Yes, good evening, Tracy. The clock is ticking. House Speaker Mike Johnson says that he expects Congress to extend existing government funding into possibly next year, probably around March, to avert a government shutdown. Now, this will set up the stage for Republicans to have full control over the budget process when the new GOP-controlled Congress and President-elect Donald Trump take office in January.
We're running out of clock. December 20th is the deadline. We're still hopeful that we might be able to get that done. But if not, we'll have a temporary measure, I think, that would go into the first part of next year and allow us the necessary time to get this done. And I think that would be ultimately a good move.
Pushing the budget process till March of next year will allow Congress to negotiate a spending deal with the Trump White House. Republicans could also attach their own priorities, such as tax cuts and broad cuts to various agencies, including the IRS, for the 2025 budget without having to negotiate with Democrats.
I think the speaker's like me. He wants to do what the president wants done. I personally think we'd be better off if we could get it done by late January, early February.
But other Republicans tell me they want to fund the government now.
I like to do appropriate bills.
You like to what?
Appropriations is what I look forward to doing. But I've just never been a CR or a omnibus or a minibus or any type of bus guy.
Congress also plans to provide additional money for disaster aid after Hurricanes Helene and Milton hit the nation. The White House is preparing a new emergency request for at least $100 billion. The Office of Management and Budget is pushing Congress to work quickly, writing, quote, "Our administration has made multiple requests to Congress outlining the need for emergency funding to address these disasters and detailing the consequences of failing to deliver this aid. To date, Congress has yet to act." Democrats now in the minority stress bipartisanship is essential.
Both sides must work together to prevent a shutdown before then. Nobody wants to hear the words "Christmas time shutdown" a few weeks from now.
Right now, there's still no plans to address the funding. The government and Congress will be gone at the end of this week for the Thanksgiving break and won't return until early December. So basically, they have about 3 weeks when they have to fund the government, pass a defense funding bill, and the farm bill before the 118th Congress ends. A lot to do in a short amount of time. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, the CDC and public health officials are investigating a multi-state E. coli outbreak. Infections are being linked to multiple brands of whole bag carrots and baby carrots sold by Grimway Farms. The company has since recalled the products, but the CDC recommends consumers check their refrigerators. So far, one person has died out of the 39 infected. In the Northeast, dry and windy conditions are making it hard for firefighters as they battle hundreds of brush fires from New Jersey to New England. The biggest fire is along the border of New Jersey and New York. Over the weekend, officials called for a voluntary evacuation of more than 150 homes so they could put out the blaze. Fortunately, rainy conditions are being forecasted to bring some relief to the very dry region. All right, now to the Philippines, where Typhoon Manyi slams the country's largest island, becoming the sixth major storm to hit the country in less than a month. I'll check out this video right here where you can see damaged roofs on the street and debris hanging from electricity wires. The powerful typhoon left the entire region without power, forcing thousands of people to flee to emergency shelters. So far, no deaths have been reported, but officials warn of a catastrophic and life-threatening situation. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a special celebration for the most vulnerable. As UNICEF celebrates World Prematurity Day, we discuss the effect that the pro-abortion movement may have on those born prematurely. And Americans are changing how they get their news, the new sources they're turning to. That's next. The biggest U.S. budget airline has filed for bankruptcy. Spirit faces more than $2.5 billion in losses and more than $1 billion in debt. This comes as the company struggled to recover from the pandemic and failed in the proposed sale to JetBlue. Spirit CEO says that he expects the airline to operate as normal and their customers can book and fly with no interruptions. In a little more than a week, a record number of people will be traveling to gather with their families for Thanksgiving. This year, AAA expects nearly 80 million people to travel at least 50 miles. That would be a new record of Thanksgiving travelers, beating out last year by nearly 2 million, and most of those people will travel by car. And if you are one of them, AAA says to expect roads to be most crowded the Tuesday and Wednesday before Thanksgiving and the Sunday and Monday afterwards. So keep that in mind, folks. A new report finds that more than 20% of Americans regularly receive their news from so-called influencers on social media. The findings from Pew Research says 21% regularly get news from digital influencers, while 51% say they do not. The remaining 28% say they do not get news on social media. Additionally, nearly 4 in 10 U.S. adults under the age of 30 get their news from influencers online. 26% of Americans age 30 to 49 and 15% of those age 50 to 64 receive their news from influencers. Well, for 16 years, the United Nations has helped to lead an initiative to raise awareness on the challenges of premature births. This year, UNICEF Vietnam spearheaded the effort to bring a global dialogue to issues that is the leading cause of death in children under the age of five. In honor of World Prematurity Day, on Sunday, the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, also known as UNICEF, called for universal access to high-quality care for preterm babies. As part of its pitch, UNICEF made an urgent plea for more help in Vietnam, since premature deaths account for roughly 45% of all child mortality cases in the Southeast Asian nation. Meantime, a 2023 report found that Vietnam also has the second highest abortion rate in the world, with most of the abortions targeting girls. And for more, we turn now to Joseph Meaning, past president and now a senior fellow at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Dr. Meaning, great to be with you today. UNICEF Vietnam led the charge this year for World Prematurity Day. That said, what do you think it says that the country with one of the highest rates of abortion is also advocating for more awareness for premature babies?
Yeah, I think it's somewhat ironic, right? Because abortion leads to more premature births. And of course, if they're concerned about infant mortality, the highest rate of infant mortality is killing babies through abortion. So both those things are terrible, and they're not being addressed.
Yeah. Do you think extreme abortion laws, do you think they're getting in the way of the care of babies that are being born prematurely? And are government leaders maybe sending mixed messages to healthcare professionals?
It's a completely mixed message, because essentially that child who's born, you know, at 6 months of pregnancy and could survive could also be legally aborted in many of these places. And so, you know, in one part of the hospital, they're delivering babies, in another part of the hospital, you know, and trying to keep them alive in the neonatal intensive care units. In other parts of the hospital, they're killing those same babies at that same age of gestation. It's really terrible. And when it comes to premature births, again, abortion, induced abortion, leads to more premature births later on and miscarriages.
Yeah, it's really mind-boggling. As we know, premature births and babies that are born alive during abortions, those babies do not receive the same care. And Planned Parenthood, as we know, seems to be spreading misinformation about aborted babies who are born alive, alleging that they don't exist. Talk to us more about that, Dr. Meany.
Well, you know, there's the Born Alive Act, actually, that was, you know, presented before Congress, because there's so many of these individuals who are born alive through abortion procedures and then are allowed to die rather than given the kind of resuscitation care that they should receive. And it's just kind of a basic law. It should happen just automatically. But unfortunately, it doesn't, because those who are intent on doing the abortion really want to guarantee a dead child. Mm-hmm. And the dreaded complication is when the child is born alive.
Yeah, while survival rates, as we know, for premature babies, they have improved significantly over the past 50 years, especially with all the medical advancements that we've had. What do you think can be done, if anything, to prevent premature births here in the U.S. and other parts of the world?
Yeah, so one thing would be to have fewer abortions. That does lead to premature birth. But there's another thing as well, is that actually having the hospital help the mothers to continue their pregnancies on, you know, when they're at risk of premature birth, the amount of days involved is very important, right? Just a few more days can really increase the likelihood the child will survive. So to actually have the hospitals being willing to admit mothers who are in danger of premature birth to really help them move forward, and also to give things like corticosteroids, et cetera, that could help develop the lungs and really increase the chances of that child surviving, even if they're born, you know, several months early.
Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. Medical care for the babies that are born prematurely. Is there anything that can be done or improved upon, or anything that's standing in the way of their care?
Sometimes it's simply a will to take care of them. So some children are born prematurely and they have handicaps or they have health problems that could be solved, but the decision is made, no, we're going to allow them to die. And that's very sad, but it's kind of a culture of death reasoning that, you know, their quality of life is not going to be that great, and therefore we're not going to try to save them. I think that's a problem in many circumstances.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Dr. Meany, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the Holy Father continues his annual tradition of hosting the poor for lunch at the Vatican. What he says we can do to become signs of the Lord's presence. Plus, a scary scene that leads to a wild rescue, and it is all caught on camera. heart-stopping rescue is caught on camera in California. The man was found dangling on the edge of a San Francisco cliff yesterday. He was struggling to hang on when a Highway Patrol helicopter arrived. Hoist lowered a crew member to grab the man. He was safely dropped down on the beach. Now, it is unclear how he got into that situation in the first place, but thanks be to God, he was not injured, and we are so happy about that. Pope Francis was joined by thousands of pilgrims to celebrate the 8th annual World Day of the Poor, emphasizing that every act of compassion is a sign of hope. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigren has more.
Brothers and sisters, let us not forget that Christian hope, fulfilled in Jesus and realized in his kingdom, needs us and our commitment. It needs our faith expressed in works of charity, and it needs Christians who do not look the other way.
A repeated plea from Pope Francis on the Church's World Day of the Poor, to follow the example of Jesus. The Holy Father chose to do just that by hosting 1,300 economically disadvantaged men, women, and children for lunch at the Vatican. The Pope established this annual tradition in 2017. This year's theme is The Prayer of the Poor Ascends to God. The celebration officially began with Holy Mass, before which the Pope blessed 13 symbolic keys representing the Vicentians' global efforts to house the homeless in 13 different countries. In his homily, the Holy Father encouraged the faithful to renew the Church's commitment to be close to the suffering by acting with hope and compassion in the face of injustice.
We are the ones that must enkindle lights of justice and solidarity, even as the shadows of our closed world deepen. We are the ones that must make His grace shine forth through lives steeped in compassion and charity that become signs of the Lord's presence, always close to the suffering of the poor, in order to heal their wounds and transform their fortune.
Pope Francis explained that the Lord draws near where there seems to be only injustice, pain, and poverty, and that the job of Christ's disciples is to become signs of the Lord's presence, showing that He is close to all those who suffer. At the end of the meal, backpacks with food and personal hygiene products were distributed by the Vincentian Fathers. Pope Francis thanked all those who helped make the day possible, including the Italian Red Cross, which provided both meals and entertainment at the luncheon. In Rome, Benedict Sittigren, EWTN News Nightly.
Pope Francis reminds the faithful that one day we will all be united in Christ.
Le crisi e i fallimenti, però, anche se dolorosi, sono importanti.
During a Sunday address at the Vatican, the Holy Father explained that everything in the world passes away except the words of Jesus, which will remain for eternity. He also stressed that we will lose nothing of what we have built and loved because death will be the beginning of a new life. Abby, thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.